Hello out there in Seminole land. We're doing a preview episode, just a quick preview episode here of the Syracuse game coming at you on Thursday, February 13th. Maybe you can listen to this, have this on in one of your pods or something when you're going out tomorrow for Valentine's Day dinner, and you can pretend like you're listening to whatever the conversation is. Just kidding. Matt Minnick here with Michael Rogner. Michael, you been watching any basketball this week?
I have watched a little bit last night. There were some good games. West Virginia lost. Louisville lost at Georgia Tech. That's ouch.
Was that basketball game or a whistleblowing contest?
That's a good question. What were there, 50 fouls or 49 fouls?
Yeah, 49 fouls, I think, yeah, in a regulation game.
Yeah, my favorite was when Jamie Lucky – So Louisville goes in for a layup and it gets blocked.
And Right.
Georgia Tech cannot score, but they go down for a breakaway dunk, and there's this just insanely late whistle. And so then they go through the review process, and it was clearly a goaltend on Georgia Tech, but they don't call it even after reviewing it for 10 minutes. So they took away points from Georgia Tech. They took away points from Louisville, all in one call, which is really, you know, he's top notch when we're talking about refs.
I really would like to see them start to just fine. Folks want to hear about what goes on in the Slack conversations. This is what's going on in the Slack conversation last night. I'd love to see the ACC commissioner just fine schools for, you know, contracting with Jamie Lucky to referee their games that night. Like, I think we should just blackball him from the entire league. Another interesting game that was on though too was that, so what if I told you that Alabama made 22 three-pointers last night and they lost? Would you believe that?
Well, if you told me who their opponent was, then I might have believed it. Auburn has won four of their last five games have come in overtime. This is Auburn has two losses on the season. They've played nobody. There's no top 25 teams in the SEC, at least, you know, from KenPom.
Yeah, from an advanced metric standpoint.
Yeah, and they just keep finding ways to win. So they won at home in overtime, three straight overtime wins and four of the last five. So they keep frauding along. So good for them. They're probably going to get at this point, they might get like a two seed or something, you know, something. Who knows?
I think the committee is seeing through a little bit. I don't know. The fact that they have two losses and they weren't a two seed in the initial release, right? I think they were. The fact that they have two losses and they still weren't a top two seed, I think the committee is at least looking at some of that. Although, again, what if they win the SEC regular season and win the SEC tournament? I don't know. At some point, if a team's 30-2, are you going to not give them a two seed?
But like 10 consecutive overtime wins.
Yeah. Well, what would happen if they play, so Florida State's won like nine straight overtime games. What would happen if Florida State and Auburn play? I mean, it's the immovable object versus the movable force or something. I just totally butchered that one.
All right. Well, yeah, well said. Those
something like that.
Something like that.
Unstoppable force in the immovable object.
Well, if Auburn ends up as a two seed in some weird alternative world and Florida State plays them in the NCAA tournament, I'll be pretty happy with that.
That would be an ideal. If we were a three seed, which right now we seem to be tracking towards a three seed, although West Virginia and Louisville losing definitely is a bonus there. But if we were a three seed, I would really like our two seed to be Auburn. That would be an ideal situation. All right. Let's, in order to be a three or a two seed, we got to keep winning basketball games. And the next game is on Saturday at the Tuck against old Jimmy Boeheim in Syracuse. Jim coming to town again to lecture us on the mythical city of Atlantis. No, actually, in a press conference, he was referencing a tournament in Atlantis that none of us seemed to be interested about or was relevant to the discussion. But he is an interesting interview. Tell us about this year's version of Syracuse, Michael.
Let's see. So they are, it's Boeheim's 44th year. Is that right? Something like that.
He's been there a while.
He's been there long enough where when he pees his pants on the sideline, we just kind of feel bad. we feel bad for him. You know, it makes everybody a little uncomfortable.
Wait, was that real?
Yeah. It happens.
Like water or something spilled on him?
I don't know. I mean, when you're in your 44th year, then you just kind of got to assume. But anyway, Elijah Hughes, they've got, you know, so he's a junior now. And
yeah,
he's a hell of a player. But he got injured in the in warm-ups for their NC State game. And excuse me.
NC State game, they lost, right?
Yeah, they lost by 5, and Hughes played 3 minutes. He started the game, and then they very quickly took him out. And the injury situation, you know, we're used to Ham never providing the next injury update that Ham provides will be the first in 18 years. So, and they're kind of playing Hughes the same way. He sent out a tweet saying he's fine, but there hasn't been any, you know, media verification of him being fine. So we'll see if he is ready to go. They had a couple guys go 40 minutes, and then two more go like 38 and 37 in that game. So without Hughes, who's their best player, they're clearly, you know, a pretty limited team in terms of who he's comfortable putting out on the floor. So a lot of this game will come down to whether or not Elijah Hughes plays. And unfortunately, you know, we just don't have an answer to that question right now.
Yeah. And I will say, so Syracuse is a team that, like they have been for the last 3 or 4 years, is dangerously close to the NCAA bubble. They're probably on the outside looking in at the current moment, although their win over Virginia is looking better. And so, knowing Elijah Hughes, or I don't know Elijah Hughes, but knowing the type of competitor that Elijah Hughes is, I would be surprised if he didn't try to like warm up and you know, convince his coaches that he could be okay to give it a go. I would expect him to certainly make the trip. Still, though, you don't just magically feel better. Like, I don't know that Florida State is the opponent that, you know, if you are not 100% or have a lower body injury, that Florida State is the opponent that all of a sudden you want to come in and sprint up and down the court. So, you know, I think Jim Boeheim's going to have to really ask himself, is it worth trying to squeeze out a marquee win on the road, you know, against an opponent that has won 61 of their last 64 games at home? Or do we let Elijah Hughes get a little bit healthier and really take care of business in their final home games, because they're running out of margin for error if they want to make the tournament. So I think he's going to have an interesting decision on his hands. Boeheim's been complaining about his depth for years, so it's not anything new that he's got guys playing 40 and 39 minutes, but it doesn't seem like he's really gone out and done much about it. And I know they've had a couple of, like, one recruit I think went straight to the G League or something. Baisley, but who has kind of emerged this year, even though they may not have a lot of players, who's emerged as some of their, you know, secondary role players that are starting to, you know, give solid contributions?
Yeah, so first, it's, you know, look at his son, Buddy Boeheim. He he's a sophomore now. Last year it kind of looked like maybe he was on the team because his dad's the coach. And now it's pretty clear that he's an ACC caliber player. He's shooting lights out. He's taken 210 threes already.
That's so a lot of threes.
Yeah, the most that any Florida State player has taken is 89. That would be MJ Walker. And Buddy's taken 210. So he's made 84.
I mean, they played 24 games. So 210, we're talking like 8+ a game, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he's taken 13. Let's see, 4 times already this year, and he's making 40%. So he's a good shooter, and that's 40% in ACC play as well. You know, 40% overall and 40% in ACC play. He plays the second most minutes in the conference, so we're not going to see him off the court very much. And he's 6'6". You know, so he's got good size. He's got a quick shot. He's a heck of a player. He doesn't doesn't do a ton of great things outside of shooting threes.
But he can stand in that corner and knock them down if we aren't paying attention to him.
Yeah, and then they've got this this freshman, Joseph Girard, who's taken 162 threes, so almost twice as much as many as anybody on our team. He's only made 32%, but he came in with the reputation of being a knockdown shooter, and he's 92% from the free throw line. So that 32% is going to go up. Let's hope it doesn't go up against Florida State. He's also a football player, you know, so he's not a football player in college, but he was in high school. So he's kind of from the MJ Walker school of guards. He's much smaller. He's about 6'1", but he's tough and he's not someone that Florida State is probably going to intimidate or rattle. He doesn't turn the ball over a ton. He's just a good player. So, Dolaja, is another guy. He's a junior. You'll notice that I haven't used the word senior yet because Syracuse doesn't have any. They're basically a team of seniors with or juniors with five freshmen and Buddy Boeheim, who's a sophomore. Inside they always have those sort of non-traditional big men. Like they're always like 6'11", 185 or something. And this year is no different. Marik Dolaja is a junior. He's 6'10", weighs less than 200. And Sidibe is another guy who's 6'10" and weighs probably right about 200. They're not going to do a ton on the offensive end, but they do anchor that zone for Syracuse and try to make it hard for Florida State to move the ball around.
Yeah, and let's talk about that zone a little bit. It's going to be a game where if you're a fan of block shots, Florida State is first in the country in blocking shots, and Syracuse is not too far behind. They are 12th in the country. And as a matter of fact, in ACC play, that's maintained. It's not just something built up against the Cornells and the Bucknells of the world that Jim always seems to make sure they do a tour of New York in the out of conference season. But so they're third in the conference in blocking shots, and they're also third in the conference in steals. So it is a defense that is, maybe not turning teams over at quite the ridiculous amount that Florida State is, but they certainly are deflecting a lot of balls. They're grabbing steals in the open court. They are altering shots at the rim. So how does one attack this 2-3 zone?
Yeah, every time we play Syracuse, I get a lot of tweets about all Florida State's doing is just passing it around the perimeter and not doing anything. And the thing you have to realize is that is doing something. What you're doing is you're trying to get the defense moving side to side. If you imagine the five guys in the zone all have sort of a space they have to guard, you're moving that zone side to side and you're looking for, potential areas where you can attack. And that happens when they're moving because they might not all five be moving, as one unit, so there's, one guy's a little slow to rotate and that opens up the whole zone. So when we're just, passing the ball around the perimeter, it looks like Florida State's doing nothing because the zone is reacting the way that they need to be reacting and we're not getting any kind of advantage. There's a couple holes in the zone. One is in the middle of it. So you'll see, a Florida State player, which is probably going to be Vassell or Patrick Williams.
I was going to say Pat could live in there too.
Yeah, like right in the middle of the zone at the foul line. You want somebody who can make mid-range shots. You want somebody who can pass the ball, and you want somebody who's really athletic to be in that spot, because you get the ball and you don't have a lot of time to do anything because the zone is collapsing and they're all super long, like Florida State athletes.
We'll call that the Phil Kofer spot. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And then the Dwayne Bacon spot would be down on the baseline in the short corner. So the short corner is just, if you imagine halfway between the lane and the three-point line, that spot along the baseline is called the short corner on both sides of the floor. So when we don't have someone at the foul line, we'll have somebody down in the short corner, and it's this it's the same kind of deal where you're just it's a hole that often opens up in zones and the place that you can attack. You don't see a lot of dribble drives into the zone. Syracuse, interesting couple of stats. One is they give up more threes than any team in the country. So half the shots taken against Syracuse this year have been threes. And Coach Hamilton is going to get his team to try to fight that, you know, just the feeling that they're going to have that they should be shooting more threes, because he really wants to attack the zone from the inside. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably come out, shoot a bunch of threes in the first half, and then Coach Hamilton will talk in the halftime interview as he goes to the locker room about needing to, you know, get more penetration into the zone.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, it's just often, you know, sort of the pattern that we see. You know, in these games. And then, you know, coupled with that 3-point stat is they also give up more assists than any team in the country. And assists are not a measure of efficiency. They're a measure of style. And so what that means is that you're never winning one-on-one battles against the zone. It's always, you know, crisp ball movement, moving it in and out of the zone. You know, in order to get shots and to be able to score with any kind of efficiency.
Right. So essentially, when the defense gets beat, it's because of that ball movement, which has then led to an assist. And as opposed to, you know, I suppose if there was a live ball steal and dunk, you know, that's obviously might not be an assist. But in the half court, it's almost always has to come from an assist. And you know, I'm thinking Malik Osborne. We talked about that short corner. I'm wondering if Malik Osborne can play a role down there. He's shown some comfort with stepping out and hitting that 16-footer along the baseline. He isn't necessarily an above-the-rim kind of player anyways, so it's not like he'll be, you know, banging down low against some of the 6'10 guys. Do you think this could be a game where you know, we mentioned that I'm sure Vassell and Patrick Williams could get the ball a lot and, you know, around the free throw line. But what about Malik Osborne?
Yeah, I think he's more likely to play there than a guy like Raekwon Gray. You know, when you get the zone moving in and out, meaning like away from the basket and back towards the basket, when you get him moving out, it creates the potential to go over the top of the zone. And so you'll see a lot of, you know, potentials for lobs to that guy in the short corner, you know, who suddenly breaks towards the basket, and then you give him a lob. And so I think Osborne's probably a little better suited to that than Gray, but we'll see how Ham, you know, makes those decisions.
You could see P-Dub probably down there a bit too as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, the one wild card is, and I agree with you that we'll probably come out and Syracuse almost just baits you into taking threes early in the shot clock, early in the game. You know, they're just making it look like this is your open, easy shot. We have seen on this, particularly at home, right? Like in the Tucker Center, we have seen games where MJ Walker, Devin Vassell, Wyatt Wilkes are capable of making 3, 4, 5 in a row. Anthony Polite. That is probably a recipe for the game getting out of hand quickly. But if those shots aren't falling early, it seems to me that, you know, and again, Elijah Hughes, we just don't know, but Syracuse has enough outside perimeter shooting on the other side to really keep this thing close.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if the spot we'll probably be attacking, or I'd like to see us attacking when we're shooting threes, is Gerard, because he's only 6'1". You know, the rest of the defense is all 6'6" and long, but for certain, Syracuse is going to be taking a lot of threes because that's how their offense works. Probably not the team I want to get into a 3-point shooting contest with, but you know, Florida State shoots so well at home that, you know, we might be able to make that happen.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about just historically against Syracuse too. You say that whenever we play Syracuse, you get all your mentions blown up with just passing around the zone. I feel like there was this sort of narrative for a long time that Florida State just could not play against a zone. And I think there were probably teams, if you go back to maybe our 2015 team that barely finished above 500, and certainly some of our teams back in like the 2009, 2010 era, when we were really built differently with, defense really first, second, and third, didn't have a lot of natural shooters on the team, passers. The last five times that Florida State and Syracuse has played, Florida State has scored scored at least a point per possession. And of course, a couple of those Syracuse teams maybe weren't your traditional, top 15 Syracuse teams, but they're still making tournaments in these years. So have you seen, as Florida State has shifted to a little bit more of a positionless style, have you seen, does it seem like we know how to attack it and draw up a game plan for it?
Yeah, I think that's really where, we talked about the short corner and the foul line, is that we haven't had really great shooting teams in terms of like teams that shoot threes. This is the best team we've had since 2014 in terms of 3-point percentage, and that's even with the line getting bumped back. But what we have had is those athletes who can sort of quick twitch. They've got some mid-range game. They've got a lot of skills, and if you look at Florida State's roster, you've got MJ Walker, Patrick Williams, Raekwon Gray, Devin Vassell, all of those guys, Osborne, are kind of built to attack a zone like this. And so if we have, a hot shooting night, then, we probably win this thing running away. But even without that, we've just got the right guys, to attack. And then the other thing that Florida State has traditionally done well is rebound offensively. And so, this team is not the greatest at that, but still it's an area of the zone. It's hard to find the guy to box out when you're playing a zone defense. So Florida State has always been able to exploit that. And we should be able to exploit it a little bit this year. I think Fiondu had like 4 putback dunks against them last year. We obviously, don't have a Fiondu on this team, but we do have some guys who can at least get in and extend possessions. And so we're built pretty well to attack their defense. I'm much more concerned about their offense. And, especially if Hughes is at, full speed.
Yeah, no, Hughes certainly makes a tremendous difference in this ball game, offensively and defensively. We're going to take a really short break, and when we come back, we're gonna do some predictions, not just for the Florida State Syracuse game, but we'll run through some of there's a whole bunch of ACC games on Saturday, so we'll run through that and make some predictions. All right, let's wrap this thing up with some ACC talk and also a call for questions. But first, let's look at the ACC. So with about 2/3 of the way through, maybe not quite 2/3, we've got Louisville there in first place still at 12-2, Duke at 11-2, Florida State at 10-3. So those three teams have really established themselves. Of course, Duke has the easiest schedule. They've both played the easiest schedule and also probably have the easiest schedule moving forward. Florida State with the 6th toughest conference strength of schedule so far, which is actually hard to accomplish when you're one of the top three teams because you can't play yourself. And then there's this huge mass of teams below them, Virginia, NC State, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, Clemson, Pittsburgh. All those teams have between 6 and 8 wins in conference play. And so really it's going to be who's going to rise out of that to maybe be the 4th or 5th team to make the NCAA tournament. Why don't we start with we'll save Florida State Syracuse for last. Why don't we start with Duke and Notre Dame with Mike Bray going against his old mentor there in Coach K.
Yeah, Notre Dame had been playing really well. They won 4 straight before losing in overtime to Virginia on Tuesday night. And so now Duke and Notre Dame, and it's at Duke, right? I don't see Duke really. I don't see much chance of Duke dropping that one. There's the potential, of course, for Notre Dame to come out and hit a million threes, but I'll take Duke big in that one.
I will take Duke as well, but they have not been playing all that well lately. I think Notre Dame hangs around for at least a half. What about NC State at Boston College? That's actually on Sunday, but that is a massive game for NC State if they have any hopes of making the tournament there at 16-8.
Yeah, Boston College is pretty much what you expect. They're a bad basketball team. NC State has probably performed not quite as well as people were expecting. I think that they feel like they're riding the ship a little bit. They've won a couple road games in a row, and now they have to go on the road to Boston College. But I think Boston College is gonna do their annual thing where they get it together for like four games a year, and I think this is gonna be one of those.
I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. Although NC State did get that big win against Syracuse, an Elijah Hughes-less Syracuse team. But I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. And I tell you what, that could be – listen, there's never a do-or-die game until you truly get into the tournament. But that could be the death knell for the Wolfpack. Speaking of teams that are on life support if they want to make the NCAA tournament, Pittsburgh, you know, opened the season with a win over Florida State, and that is definitely what's kind of the marquee notch on their resume, so to speak. But they're at 15-10. They've dropped some games they probably should have won, and it seems to be getting down to the wire for them. They're going at Virginia Tech, who's really started to look like a team who is a bunch of freshmen and sophomores playing a 20-game ACC slate.
Yeah, Virginia Tech is the wheels have come off. You know, they've lost five straight. A couple of those were, you know, double digits. Pitt cannot play on the road. You know, they're one of these teams that plays really well at home, and they beat Robert Morris on the road and somehow got by North Carolina, a really terrible North Carolina team. They've played bad. They've mostly got blown out on the road, and so I think that Virginia Tech is going to very temporarily halt their skid before reassuming that against Duke in a week and probably finishing the season with another five-game losing skid.
I think I'm gonna go opposite of you here. I think I'm gonna say that Pitt, a desperate Pitt team that knows they're coming to Florida State on Tuesday, which that is gonna be certainly a difficult game. I think they get focused and win at a reeling Virginia Tech team in a close one, maybe 2 or 3 points on Saturday night. We'll do one more, you know. Miami, North Carolina, Wake, they honestly, they don't even really matter at this point. But I do want to get your thoughts on – it's not because of North Carolina. It's because of Virginia. Virginia seems to be that team that's trying to be the fourth, you know, to get that – grab that double bye. They're the defending national champs. They're Thomas Woldentensee is – I don't know. I think that's how you say his last name. He's really starting to light up from three. Do you think they go into North Carolina and get the win, or is North Carolina done for the year?
I do think that Virginia gets the win. I mean, North Carolina had a close game at Florida State that they were almost able to win, and then they weren't. And then they backed that up with the overtime loss to Duke, which was just a heartbreaker. And then they do the most predictable thing in the world, which is go to Wake Forest and just get the doors blown off.
Right.
So I don't think they're going to recover. And this is prime time for Virginia to go, you know, pick off a game.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. It's weird, you know, people talk about like, oh, you can't let one game, you know, one loss turn into two. I think North Carolina is going to let that Duke loss turn into six. I think that, you know, they find a way to get one of those free throw rebounds, and they probably, I wouldn't even be surprised if they reeled off three or four wins in a row. That they have that talent, certainly, but That just seemed to be a backbreaker, and now they've got the boa constrictor of Tony Bennett's defense coming in that seems ready to just squeeze the life out of them. I mean, Virginia won against Notre Dame earlier this week, 50-49 in overtime, so 99 points total in the game in overtime, and I think that they are just gonna just relentlessly squeeze the life out of UNC. All right, so that brings us to the Syracuse Florida State game. So we got Syracuse right smack, you know, there in the middle. They're 14-10 overall, 7-6 in conference play, desperate for an NCAA tournament kind of signature victory, if you will, and a road win at Florida State would certainly count as a signature win. What do you see happening?
Yeah, you just talked about not letting one loss turn into two or three, and that's the situation that Florida State's in with that, you know, kind of close emotional loss to Duke, and I can hardly even say it. And so Syracuse comes into town, but you know, Florida State played, as if you listen to the Duke pod, it was my impression that Florida State played really well against Duke. They just didn't make the shots, but they schemed and got tons of good looks, open shots. They also played really well in the second half versus Miami. So Florida State has at least put the kernel in my head that maybe they're starting to figure out who this team is and how they can win games. And I'm going to kind of roll with that for now. I'm going to assume that they really are playing what well, and it's just not a game and a half of just. Shenanigans that have gone their way. So I think that Syracuse is going to come in with or without Elijah Hughes, and they're probably going to lose by 10. I'll take Florida State like 75-65, something like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you saw at the Duke game, I honestly listened to a few national pods this week, and it seems that others heard the same thing. There were some folks on CBS, some folks that even Jay Billis, who sometimes has, I feel like, takes that he makes just so that Jay Billis can be the smartest guy in the room, which probably he is sometimes. But it seemed like Florida State was impressive to a lot of people, even in the loss. And I think what was most impressive to me was that, it was not a game where they went up there and just made a bunch of threes and the score was close. They really had to overcome some of their own shortfalls in that game and stay mentally dialed in, continue to work the sets, run the action that was generating open looks, and just stay in the game mentally and physically. And I thought they did that, and they did that coming off a short rest on the road in one of the toughest environments in college basketball. So I think that was really impressive the more I've had time to kind of reflect on the FSU-Duke game. I don't think there's any world in which I would predict a loss just because when a team has won 61 out of 64, like, it just seems, statistically speaking, I don't know that you're all that good picking a loss. But I'm with you. I think that Florida State's going to come out, and sure, might it be nip and tuck there for a bit? Yeah, because most basketball games don't start off with a 20-0 run. But I think that Florida State will slowly but surely pull away, and the second half might look a lot like the Miami second half, where it's a 4 or 5 point lead, and all of a sudden it's a 12 or 13 point lead, and then from there it's just a comfortable working margin. So I will say Florida State, maybe I'll say a hair lower scoring than you. Let's call it 72-60 as a final.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Billis and some of the national writers kind of echoing our thoughts. The pod is getting more listens these days. So, hey. Hi to Jay,
we should have Jay on that, a couple of lawyers here. We could have a good conversation. Speaking of here, a dialogue, if you will, we know we can't have all of you on the podcast all at once, but we would love to have your questions. So the next pod that Michael and I do, which might come Sunday, might come Saturday afternoon after the Syracuse game. I don't know. We might just surprise ourselves. But why don't you, this is an official call out for questions. You can, write them in the comment section on Tomahawk Nation. You can tweet them to Michael Rogner. And we want to hear from you. And what questions do you have, for the pod? Anything else, Michael, before we sign off for the evening?
No, just a reminder, it's an early game on Saturday. So
another noon tip. Yeah, it was at two Saturdays, right? In a row, maybe three? something like that. Two in a row, I think.
All right. So get your sleep and get down to the tuck.
Means some tasty pancakes and bacon, though, for me at the old media breakfast. So not going to complain at that.
Okay. Yeah, good for you.
Yeah. What is that? 9 a.m. for your start?
Yeah, 9 a.m. So I'll make my own pancakes and be ready to roll.
Well, the good news is if we win, which we do often in the tuck, you have the rest of the entire day to bask in the glory of another Florida State victory.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. We'll talk next time and look forward to answering questions.